On this week's 51%, we'll hear about how a famous New York City park could see its first female statue.
I started looking for women, and I couldn't find any, except for, of course, Alice in Wonderland, Mother Goose, and Juliet being embraced by Romeo.
A Malaysian woman is a virtual mom, and another mom takes issue with a few words. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
When I was a boy, I scared the pants off of my mom, climbed what I could climb up. And I don't know how I survived. I guess I knew the tricks that all boys knew.
There are no statues honoring real women in Central Park. That's in line to change, as a group has advocated for a statue of women's rights and women's suffrage pioneers, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, to be placed in the famous New York City park. The group, aptly named, is the Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony Statue Fund, Inc. In May of 2015, New York City Parks Commissioner Mitchell Silver penned a letter confirming conceptual approval for the organization's effort to commission and endow a monument to the two women. Dr. Miriam Miejan is a vice president of the fund. I asked her how she became involved in the effort.
The movement itself started with a blog that actually I co-authored with my husband that appeared on Huffington Post in March of 2013. The title was Time to Remember the Ladies in Central Park. But what led to that was that Central Park is one of my favorite places in New York City. I've spent a lot of time there. And at a certain point, I was looking at these statues, and there were statues of a 14th century Polish king, three statues of South American, heroes, like some 19th century Italian politician, revolutionary, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, how come these people have nothing to do with the park? They're here, and I just started wondering about them. And then I thought, and where are the women? I started looking for women, and I couldn't find any, except for, of course, Alice in Wonderland, Mother Goose, and Juliet being embraced by Romeo. So then I started doing a little research and found that there were 22 statues of men in the park. And the three that I mentioned were the only women. And in fact, so 22 men and not one single statue honoring women. And the men were, most of them had nothing to do with our country or our culture. What happened was after my husband and I, after our blog ran in the Huffington Post, then we sort of felt, we shouldn't just write about this. We should do something about it. And then I came up with the idea that Elizabeth Cady Stanton had a lot of children. I think it was either six or eight children. And, I said, with so many children, there must be some descendants somewhere.
Sure.
And I just Googled Elizabeth Cady Stanton descendants. And lo and behold, there I found Colleen Jenkins-Salins right near us in Greenwich, Connecticut. So I called her up, and she's an absolute treasure. I mean, she's wonderful, and we were so thrilled to get her, with us. And I mean, she's already worked on issues like this. We now have a fabulous spot for our statue,
which is where?
On Central Park West and 77th Street. We're across the street from the New York History Museum, which is great, and just half a block down from the Natural History Museum. And school children are taken to these museums all the time. Every time we've gone to visit, there have been classes brought there by their teachers. So as we see it, we will be an absolute natural.
Sure, it's a high-profile spot ripe for education, right?
Yes, and that's really what we're concerned with, because there's been some improvement since the women's movement of the late 60s and 70s. I mean, there's now some mention of women in history books. you know, which there was essentially like nothing before, but it's still very, very little. And many people, for example, even very educated people, we've asked friends, older people, people of different ages, when we mention Elizabeth Cady Stanton, they've never heard of her.
Mm.
Or they say things like, oh, that name is kind of familiar. Who was she? Well, to me, that's outrageous. It's very disturbing. But I understand it because there's so little focus on women, you know, and Elizabeth Cady Stanton was sort of the Thomas Jefferson of women. I mean, in fact, she, one of the extraordinary things she did, she was a brilliant woman. She, together with some others, rewrote Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Independence. And instead of focusing it on we the American males, and then their gripes about the British, it was we American women and our gripes about men controlling our lives. And it's a brilliant, brilliant document, which really should be read by every high school student, if not earlier. But you know, this is just not part of the game. So we hope that our statue will be a small step in the direction of, you know, remembering women or focus, knowing or being aware that women have played a huge role in this country.
You know, I read that there were some efforts back when to get statues erected of women. Of Mary Poppins, I understand, was next. And, you know, you referred to some of the men up there really not having anything to do with this country. And Mary Poppins, an English nanny, I'm just curious what that would have lent.
Yeah, well, that would have been another fictional character. I don't understand why anyone would suggest that as a, you know... In fact, I read that, too. I was actually unaware of that, but that seemed bizarre. It was certainly time to honor some real women, you know, and when we worked on this blog, we came up with, it was approximately 50 names of women who were very deserving of statues, and of course, including the two that we ultimately went with, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. But on our list were women like Rachel Carson, who founded the whole environmental movement, Edith Wharton. You know, there's a literary walk in Central Park. Where is Edith Wharton? Pulitzer Prize-winning New York City author. And then, you know, there are people like... Oh, Nellie Bly. So few people, I mean, have heard about. Nellie Bly was the woman who invented what is called, I believe, stunt journalism. She, at the turn of the 20th century, she got herself locked up in a mental institution, an institution for the mentally insane. And then she wrote about the horrible conditions there. So she started a whole genre. She did this. That was not the only time she did it. And then she also traveled around the world. Jules Verne was around the world in 80 days, I think. She did it in 10 days less than Jules Verne's.
And we never hear about that, right?
Oh, she was, at the time, to say that she was well-known is a great understatement. When she came back to New York after having achieved this extraordinary tour of the world, she was greeted by tens of thousands of people. It was like a huge, huge, celebration. And then, you know, that's it. Women can achieve almost anything, and they're hardly heard of afterwards.
It's true. And the list, when you were talking about the ideas, Ida Tarbell, since you were just talking about journalism, was another suggestion, right?
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, there's so many, so many. And actually, one of our suggestions was a statue of Jane Cook Wright to replace the statue of Marion Sims, a male. This would be very appropriate. There's a New York City councilwoman who's been trying for years to get rid of the statue of Dr. Marion Sims. He was a 19th century physician, a gynecologist, who did experiments on slave women without using any anesthetic. And then he went on to use the information that he gathered to perform surgery with anesthetics on white women. So, you know, this is, to put it mildly, not someone who really should be honored in Central Park. And Jane Cook Wright is an African-American scientist who played an important role in research on chemotherapy. So we thought it would be only fitting to replace this racist black male with an African-American woman scientist who made some important discoveries. I just wanted to mention that that Stanton and Anthony worked for the right of women to vote, but also for a lot of other rights that women didn't have. For example, women couldn't inherit anything in their own name. Some male member of the family had to be in charge if their father died. They couldn't own any property in their own name once they were married. Say they brought the money from their inheritance into the marriage, the husband had total control. The husband was the only one who could make decisions about children. In case of divorce, the husband automatically got custody. So they worked on all these issues, and they got some changes in their lifetime in New York State. Some of these laws were changed. So people always think of them as just the vote, but it was much, much more than that.
That was Dr. Miriam Miejean, author, philosopher, lecturer, and vice president of the Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony Statue Fund. Her husband is the fund's secretary and treasurer. They reside in New York's Hudson Valley region. And in addition to Stanton and Anthony, a list of the names of others whose work was crucial to the success of the movement will be inscribed around the statue's base, including Sojourner Truth and Alice Stone Blackwell. And just to note that the 200th anniversary of the birth of Elizabeth Cady Stanton is in November this year. The New York State Women's Suffrage Centennial in 2017, the National Women's Suffrage Centennial in 2020, and the 200th anniversary of the birth of Susan B. Anthony also in 2020. Millions of migrants to America have been forced by war or poverty to leave their children behind. Far fewer have done so because of religious rules regarding child custody. Jocelyn Coffin has the story of a Malaysian mother who left her children 9,000 miles away and stays connected via Skype. She has the intention of reuniting with them one day, and that day is fast approaching, but changed circumstances make her uncertain about what to do.
This morning, I was up at 4 in the morning. Insomnia, this is also one of the things that happens when your children are far away. Hi, Aman.
Hello.
What are you doing?
I'm sitting in my bed.
Soraya is learning to be a virtual mom to her two sons growing up almost 9,000 miles away. She's pursuing a master's degree at the University of Southern California, but her mind is constantly pulled to Penang, Malaysia.
Eldest son, he's 11, so I know he's going through that preteen age, and it's so hard to just have a conversation with him.
Sometimes Aman would rather spend time reading Marvel comic books. But Soraya tries to make it feel like they're hanging out together in the living room, practicing English, and playing games.
Okay, your turn. Make a funny face.
I have a duck face.
That's a duck face? Their faces are, I would see like the curvature of the cheek and remember how I would like nibbling or biting or just pinching or just, you know, kissing them on the cheek. And hearing their voices is the most perfect voice ever for me.
How's that? Good.
That was horribly awesome.
Thank you.
Even not seeing them on a daily basis is hard enough. Not seeing them on a weekly basis was harder. Being here is the hardest. There's no way to go around the fact that you don't have them in your life.
5 years ago, Soraya was shocked when her husband said he wanted to end their marriage, almost unthinkable in a Muslim country.
Divorce is perceived as something that you would not do.
For Soraya, the fallout was complicated, but the act of divorce was simple.
It's not me asking for a divorce, because in Islam, for you to get divorced is when the man specifically says that he divorces you. as long as he would state it out loud that he divorces you, then you're divorced. So it was like a year after we got divorced, he got married.
Her ex-husband and his new wife created a tight family circle that included her two sons, but limited her access to her children.
When I found out that he was having another baby, that was the lowest I've been.
As she saw them less and less, she started to wonder what her purpose was. And finally, she made the decision to leave Malaysia to create something new for herself.
My role as the mom is already going to get replaced by somebody else. Looking at the options that I have, it was either going to school, married, or settling somewhere else.
When she came to secular Los Angeles, she found a community of Muslim women and a new relationship with her faith. In the newly opened Women's Mosque of America, Soraya joins other women in customary ablutions, washing her feet before she enters the sanctuary. Light streams through stained glass as women kneel and pray.
Women say, at amalana, man yahdi lahi fala mudilla lah.
In Malaysia, moms are men, and women are relegated to separate prayer spaces. In this mosque, a woman leads female worshippers in prayer in the main hall. For the first time, Soraya feels able to practice her religion free of societal pressures. Here, she can paint her nails a bright colored red and wear a paisley print hijab.
Someone who just wants to be around other sisters, or somebody who has a lot of children and they want to bring their children to get exposed to Islam at an early age. So I feel like this safe space is one of the most important things that we should take out from the Women's Mosque of America. Because Malaysia is a predominantly Muslim country, it was just much more easier to practice it. But having the deeper understanding of the struggles and coming to terms with the faith and not just practicing it because it's culturally embedded in you, I feel I get that more right here than I did in Malaysia.
Soraya is discovering herself in a new way in Los Angeles. But there were still things she couldn't get used to.
The first week went on fine. Second week, I could not live on any more salad or sandwiches. I need my rice.
A friend told her to call a mutual Malaysian friend who cooked. She married the cook, and now they're considering having children.
Another child sounds awesome. Preferably a daughter, but we'll see. I have names all figured out.
But she never gave up hope of being reunited with her sons. And that requires her to be patient with her ex-husband.
If I'm not on good terms with him, then I won't be able to talk to my children. And that's something that's always looming inside my head. I know a huge part of me wants to stay on after I finish school. I also feel there's an option that I might go back. But looking at the pros and cons of staying and going back, I think the option of going back is lesser than the want and the need to stay on here.
Here she visits museums and loves trips to Legoland. She has the Women's Mosque and her new husband. But back in Malaysia, there's no guarantee that she'd have more access to her boys.
In conversations that I've had with my ex-husband, he's been talking about some of the things where there might be a possibility for me to bring them here.
Today, Los Angeles feels like home for Soraya. But until she's with her sons again, she'll always be stretched between two worlds.
Ayman, I love you.
I love you too.
I miss you.
I miss you.
I'm Jocelyn Coffin for Bending Borders.
With Mother's Day a good couple of months behind us, or several months ahead, depending on your point of view, writer Dr. Jerry Burns reflects upon a piece of writing that day and the need to pay attention to certain words every day.
On Mother's Day, a Salon article pulled my attention away from worrying about the garden I wasn't weeding and the veggies I wasn't planting. The writer, Mary Elizabeth Williams, a mother of two, was concerned about how Mother's Day excludes many people. People who've lost their mothers, people who are not yet mothers, and most importantly, those who through choice or circumstance are not and will not be mothers. Her choice of wise words was more stunning than all the Mother's Day bouquets that flashed across my social media feed that day. She described those women as child-free, not childless. Brava, Mary Elizabeth Williams. Being childless suggests that something is lacking in a person who doesn't have a child. It implies emptiness. In contrast, the phrase child-free conjures up a very different picture. It promotes an image of an unburdened, vibrant, or fulfilled soul. I know a woman who is that woman, certain that having a child is not in her future. She says, I don't have it in me. It's not how I want to live my life. With a beloved job, cosplay, puppies, continuing education, theater, and a soulmate partner, her life is far from empty. This woman bubbles with fullness and joy. Now, there are many ways to cut the adult identity cake. Parenting is just one of them. Parenthood is a huge choice, and because of that, it's wise for people to decide it consciously. Not everyone is wired for parenting, so why does the often used word to describe someone without children suggest that the non-parenting state is lacking? And then there's the flip side. Do those who are child-free not by choice want words to remind them that their life lacks something? I don't think I would relish that. The reason I was inspired to write this piece is because the Salon article reminded me about another family phrase that needs retooling. You all know it. It's a tried-and-true phrase that pigeonholes the one-child family. As mom to one child, I have to tell you that the phrase only child really rankles me. Like the word childless, it implies that there is a hole, an absence, an unfortunate, asocial tunnel where my solitary child languishes alone when he should be in a social skills 101 class. The term drips with subtext when people say, "He's an only child." I've felt people's disapproval of me, but worse than that, my child often overhears the disapproval in people's tones. Why lay all that on a kid? And then again, there's this phrase. Oh, you only have one? Did we miss the parenting bus? Are our lives substandard? Not as far as we're concerned. Believe it or not, just like people choose a child-free life, others choose to have one child. The reasons are as varied as Mother's Day breakfast items and gifts. Finances, work responsibilities, single parenthood, and sometimes one child is all a family can manage for other reasons. My husband and I were not certain about whether we would stop the baby assembly line with our one beautiful boy. We were open to being a family of three, but when Zach was about four, we decided to go for it and try being a family of four. Then a medical situation happened. Although we could have another child, we decided it would be wisest to keep things at the status quo. So for us, having one was a joint decision with fate. Ultimately, it turned out to be the best thing for our son. He's never pined for siblings or felt like it was wrong or selfish of us to have just him. His social skills are impressive, and he's never wanted for human connectivity with peers and people of all ages. Our son is not and never was the spoiled brat that so many people expect from him because of his lonely only status. So instead of referring to these children as onlys, why can't our words be more objective? I stumbled on a term that feels promising. Instead of saying only child, we can call my son a single child. It doesn't suggest that the world collapsed in on our poor family, and more important than that, the term doesn't imply that he's a pawn in a poorly constructed family group. Single child describes our family constellation in as neutral way as possible. It lays no blame, it casts no stones, it just is. And the best thing is that if we get rid of the phrase, only children, then families whose situation was caused by calamity won't have salt rubbed in the wound again and again with everyday language. There's no need for that. Words matter. It's possible to take charge of language and make it a judgment-free zone and show the world that single children and child-free adults are no more or less complete than anyone else.
Dr. Jerry Burns is a storyteller, writer, and educator living in New York's Hudson Valley. You can find her at storycrafters.com. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. And you can follow us on Twitter @51% Radio. This week's show is number 1366.